Welcome back in to See Ball, Get Ball. I'm your host, David Pollack. Brent Rollins joining me as always. He writes for Rivals for PFF. Love the new name change. Well received. The name seems to be on brand. Gary Danielson, our last guest, approved and thought it fit the personality well. He was great, man. I thought he was awesome. If you missed his interview, you know, go back because that dude saw so much football in the 20 years in the SEC, the years before that in the Big Ten, and just, I mean, the stories with Cam and Tebow and Johnny Football, and I thought his Johnny Football take was hilarious, too, about how
it was really good.
Gary refused, like, I didn't do the Johnny Football thing until he beat Bama, and I thought that was funny, good guess, but it was a good tip of the cap to him because just so many good stories. And then today, we got spring football all over the country. We stumbled into the last topic last week or a couple weeks ago talking about ranked returning quarterbacks and ranking them on a list. So we'll get to that. And then and Dylan Bell out of Georgia, strong comments. I mean, talking about his receiver room, Brent. I know you. I know you've already looked at Brent's work for Rivals and PFF. I'm sure you've studied the numbers, and I'm assuming that Dylan Bell is not correct with what they have returning versus some other teams in the country.
I mean, in terms of actual production on the field at the school that they're playing for, yes, I think he's very much incorrect there. But I do love his belief. Gary was awesome, though, because – and the one thing that I think that I took home from the interview with him as much as anything was the dude just loves football. Like, and it's just everything that he does is, hey, I'm about the game. I just want to watch the game and talk about the game. And everything is about the actual game itself versus – a lot of the sort of other pieces that come with college football and the spectacle that is college football, but
which is Brent, it's easier said than done when you get at a high level. And I say that because you get to know these coaches, you sit with them on a weekly basis, you go to their practices. So I've been to all these campuses and all these places, you know them face to face. So to then be able to critique them, it takes a special person. Like it takes somebody that's willing to say, I might get a text message. Somebody might be upset, and that's okay. And I think that's what stood out about Gary for all those years. I think he was very willing to call a spade, and if it pissed people off, so be it. And it's not like he was trying to, but he was very much comfortable with it.
Just as he saw it, very much as he saw it. And you know, so this year will be his last year, and then retiring after that. But one sort of start to the day, I don't know if you saw the news overnight. That Val Kilmer passed away. I think he was 65. Maybe I did. I see that. But
I know he struggled just, for years and years. I know his health.
The throat cancer. But just a phenomenal actor and so many just epic parts that he played, roles that he played, Tombstone, Top Gun.
Iceman stands out right away.
Yep.
I mean, just – and I think when they were doing the sequel, I think his health had a lot to do with it because they were trying to get it done, I think, a little bit faster. But he plays a cool role in the sequel, too. I couldn't believe the Top Gun, the sequel, was that good. I was
phenomenal.
I was blown away because the sequel usually sucks. And that was so good. I mean, I've watched that three or four different times, and I don't watch many movies. So that tells you how good it was.
Yeah, if it's ever on, like Paramount Plus or the AMC or whatever movie channel scrolling through at night, I'm stopping it there and just leaving it there. Very much so. Heat, that was another big time movie.
Yeah.
The role that he played. It was cool, great movie. One for me that it's kind of an underrated role that he plays that I'll watch if it's on is The Saint with Elizabeth Shue. He played like this spy guy and a bunch of different roles within it. But anyway, so rest in peace, Mr. Val Kilmer. But spring football is very much here. It's the fun part of football, I think. As much as anything, because the teams and their social media accounts are having fun with certain things.
Bored. They're very bored.
Exactly, because there's no actual games and the next opponent to talk about. So, and then we just had April 1st, April Fool's jokes. Penn State put on their social somebody put their entire locker room or what was within the kids' lockers, wrapped everything in foil. So the kids opened their lockers and everything was wrapped in foil. Except for April Fool's. That was phenomenal. I saw a clip of Lenora Sellers blocking from South Carolina's. It was actually very impressive. Like, hey,
maybe, I don't think you want to get in front of it. That's a full grown man.
we're going to talk about him in a little later. And also you get to the commentary. So one of the first comments that I wanted to bring up was Caleb Downs. And Caleb Downs was, you know, doing an interview, and it's just, you could just tell the Nick Saban Alabama DNA will be forever etched into him. I'm sure the kid thinks that way anyway. But he's like, we is the 25 season. We haven't earned anything. We can't take credit for winning anything at this point. So championship banners don't mean anything for him. I'm ready to get better. No. Talking about getting better, process, all that. So it was
cool to hear that. Brent, he's a different bird. I mean, and we've known that from the jump. Like, just, and I've told this before, but like last year at our golf tournament, him and his dad came and they played, and he read a book while he played. Like, he's not a typical kid. Like, this dude is very hyper focused on what he wants to be.
Dialed into greatness.
Yeah, I mean, he's not into the messing around. And you watch him play, you see that too. It's no nonsense, and it's not about the celebrations and the dancing. It's about winning. And you know, he had a big part of why that happened. And yeah, he's been trained, but I think he's been trained by his daddy super well. And yeah. I think he's been raised unbelievable. And he's just got a chip on his shoulder and an edge to him and a brain thought, a capacity that's just, he's just special. He's one of those guys that's going to go in the NFL right away and be great. And he's going to be great for a long time and probably have a Hall of Fame career because he's just that kind of guy.
Speaking of dialed in, one person who, if he's talking and I'm scrolling, I stop and listen. And that's Kenny Dillingham.
And he's good, man.
He's unbelievable. And this was actually late last week, so kind of getting back to it, but they opened their Saturday practice to the public. And he said, fan presence will help limit complacency. Have a day off, lose a one-on-one rep, it's going on social media. You just can't take a day off because everybody's going to see it. And he was basically saying, hey, we want guys dialed in because that's how you get better. And we're here to get better. The standard, you know, it was just phenomenal to listen to. And him and what he's doing at Arizona State.
Yes.
Going on the uptick, I think.
It's going to keep going that direction. He's not wrong. I mean, that, you know, fear of screwing up is a powerful motivator, you know, like, you know, being able to, but also the other side too, there's a lot of kids that they also want to be on social media and they want pats on the back. So everybody's got a different reason of why they try really, really hard. But he is one of those guys. And by the way, write that down, Brent. That needs to be our show. Like, when we're scrolling through Twitter or X or whatever it is you're at, like, who are you stopping for? Because Dillingham, he put out one a couple months ago that I thought was so cool. We talked about him when he was in a GA role. And he was in a GA role at Arizona State, his first coaching gig. And he was excited a couple days before camp started. So he's a coach. Like, he's in the mix. Couple days before, they came in and told him they had hired another person on the staff and that he was out. And he was like, I had one or two options. I could quit and pout, or I could freaking double down. And he was like, he said, it's not their job to hire you. It's your job to make yourself so necessary and so good that they can't pass you up. Like, it's your job to get a promotion. It's not somebody else's job, and make it undeniable. And it's kind of cool. He talked about, like, recruiting, whatever it took, getting copies from the copier, getting coffee, whatever it took. Like, I was going to make myself indispensable. And I think Kenny Dillingham's done a pretty dang good job to mandate him being on the list, because that's what he said. You got to mandate someone hire you. He's mandated a raise and mandated to being putting that conversation of one of the best in college football.
That actually reminds me of a quote that I saw is, find what your boss doesn't like to do and master it.
Yeah. Solid.
It's kind of the reason I'm around. but then other recent comments yesterday, Dylan Bell talking to the Georgia media was just kind of talking about the room and Zachariah Branch, the transfer from USC, and how he wanted him to come, and that was sort of thing. And then he sort of casually put in that, hey, I think we feel like we have the best receiver room in the country at Georgia, which, you know, Bell, Branch, the transfer from USC, then Noah Thomas from A&M, and potentially Colby Young. We don't necessarily definitively know that, but potentially him. So, yeah, maybe. But so we thought we'd look at some other rooms who have, at least at their current school, done a little bit to warrant that.
First of all, the fact that Bell can say that after last year, that group leading the country in drops and being one of the absolute Achilles heel of the team, like probably the biggest weakness on the team, week in and week out consistently, I like the confidence. Like, I like how he feels about himself. I thought Bell last year, compared to the year before, I thought he was a guy that was kind of on the upswing and was about to take off, you know, played running back the year before and wide receiver and a little bit of everything, but was a really good, you know, listen, I'm not saying he's Deebo Samuel, but Deebo Samuel light, like catch the ball, great run after the catch, physical, be a great receiver. Yes, he had a lot of drops too, and he had a lot of missed opportunities. And so he's a guy coming back that Georgia fans want more from, just like they wanted more from a bunch of other guys on the field that were making mistakes. And so I think the big thing is obviously you take that and now bring in all of these different guys and where they fall in this conversation, I think is, you know, this is fun. This is the offseason. This is what we do in the offseason. You got to get lists like this and things like this that are fun to talk about
to your guys. So I think – the easy sort of number one on that list, if we were to say, hey, off the top of your head, who's the best receiver room in the country? I think number one is Smith.
It's not, him, it's not, the, it's not the room. It's Jeremiah Smith. It's pretty simple. Like, I mean, he's just the way he finished last year. And then, I mean, that dude being a freshman and just he's a full grown man. And like, but also the lineage and the history. We saw a bunch of Tate last year as the number three guy with Ibuka. And he proved he was catching things and like he's going to be good. You know, the tight end room is always solid, but you know, the next receiver is there too. Like that's just the way Ohio State has worked year after year after year. So I'm going Ohio State usually with a blindfold and throwing a dart and saying Ohio State.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to give you some, I'll go with two, at least three others here that I'll throw out there and let you kind of pick who's next up for you with these three groups. So Auburn, which has Cam Coleman, got Georgia Tech transfer Eric Singleton, among others. And then Alabama with Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard, and then the Miami transfer, the Horton kid. And then Clemson with Wesco, Antonio Williams, and then T.J. Moore. So who are you taking next in that group?
I'll take Clemson next in that group. And I think it's hard to say that because Ryan Williams easily comes in as the next most talented guy. And obviously he showed you enough last year. And I do think he's a guy that with good quarterback play, they might shoot up this chart really, really quickly. And his comparisons to Jeremiah Smith might be more comparable because he can do some amazing things and just ridiculous. It's different. It looks different. It feels different, but it's still freaking good. And okay. So the thing about Auburn I like is, I think you got the big body and the little body. I love having the compliment of you got the slot guy, you got the guy out wide. That's a good thing. So I think Auburn they have to be better at quarterback play. But the reason I'm going with Clemson is I think Clemson has variety and they've got three guys that can do it. I mean, I think they've got a trio. That's why I'm so high on Clemson next year. This feels like I'm not looking at their line of scrimmage, Brent, on the other line and going, man, a bunch of maulers, so much better. That's what they've been. But when they were great, really good quarterback play, which they have, really good receivers that they can spread it out to, which they haven't had in a long time. So experience in that QB spot, a better offensive line, experience in the system. This offense and this receiving core is going to be an absolute handful week in and week out.
And it will come into play when we look at sort of returning QBs too and how you rank those. I think that matters in that. A couple of three others that I at least listed, Arizona State, mainly just because Jordan Tyson is
a freak show. I mean,
his injury was big for them. I think if he doesn't get hurt, like they might be a little deeper potentially in the college football playoff.
There's no telling, but also Tyson and again, with QB, so we'll talk about that, with that QB and with the coach, because Coach Dillingham is so freaking good. He doesn't put that guy at the X receiver and just say, go play ball. No, bullcrap. He's going to put him in the backfield. He's going to put him in the slot. He's going to move him around. He's going to throw screens to – like, he's going to do a great job of featuring a one wide receiver. If he's got a great one, he'll catch the ball 100 times and make big play after big play. So I agree with that because Tyson was an absolute stud.
LSU with some transfers. Aaron Anderson is a smaller guy that's returning, but Nick Anderson from Oklahoma and then Berrion Brown from Kentucky transfers. Theirs is much like Georgia's. You got to see it first. And then Texas with Wingo, DeAndre Moore, and then they've got a couple five-star big-time freshman kids that are coming in as well. So those are on the outside looking in, I think, from those other four that we looked at. But I do like Dylan Bell's confidence. Always got to appreciate that you have belief in your room. And it's one of those things where you put different guys into these situations, and then all of a sudden maybe you do get exponential return on your investment, I guess.
Well, and one thing I'll say about, like, the older I get and the further I get away from the game, like, you don't realize certain things. I didn't realize how much intelligence plays into football. I just didn't. I didn't realize that until I got older, until really I started coaching and I started, like, why can't you see this? And why can't you see that? And it kind of drove me nuts for a little bit. Like, I don't understand why you can't see that. And especially working with high school kids now, sometimes I'll get frustrated. So intelligence matters, but also confidence. The confidence of the individual has a long way to go to being successful. Like, you've got to believe it, man. Like, even if everybody else doesn't and you believe it, you make more plays when you believe. And when you think something good is going to happen, a lot of times it happens. But if you don't have that confidence, you can have all the ability in the world. So he's got the first thing mastered. Like, having that confidence is huge for a wide receiver, that having the ball thrown to him at different spots, different angles, you know, different guys.
It's the ultimate performance enhancing drug. It's confidence. All right. So last week we looked at, because we were looking at kind of the final top 25 in the college football rankings, and just notice the trend. And what was that trend? Is that 2/3 of the teams in the top 25 were either completely starting over at quarterback, either a transfer coming in or somebody had graduated and now it's, you know, next up kind of situation, like Arch at Texas. But so we went through a bunch of different situations where, and answered the question, all right, did they get better at quarterback with either the new transfer or the younger kid stepping up? And that leaves 10 teams that were in the final top 25 who return their starting quarterback. And you mentioned last week that, hey, we should rank these guys. So we're going to do that right now. So I'm going to at least list the guys, and then we'll go through in terms of rankings and who we put there. So, and this was based upon the final college football playoff rankings before the actual seeds and all that garbage. So 4th was Penn State, Allard coming back. 7th, Tennessee with Nico back. 9th was Boise State, so Maddox Mattson. 10, SMU, Kevin Jennings. 12, Arizona State with Sam Leavitt. 15, South Carolina with Lenore Sellers. 16 was Clemson with Klubnik. 17, BYU with Retzlaff. 18, Iowa State with Rocco Beck. And then 20, Illinois with Luke Altmaier. All right, so it's list time. It's offseason rankings and going into it. And
I'm actually very curious
to see, because I think we're going to be different here.
This was really difficult because, well, first of all, I have a small brain. And so I got confused, Brent, because I started you sent me your list of those ranked teams. And I'm like, wait a minute, like Nussmeier's coming back and Lagway's coming back. I'm like, you missed a couple of these guys. And I'm like, okay, it's just top 25 teams. So I kind of started doing both because I'm like, Diego Pavia. Like, you know, I'm thinking all these different guys. I wrote down Taylen Green from Arkansas. I am shocked he's still at Arkansas. Like, I am shocked because I think that dude, from a talent perspective, like watching him make plays and scramble around at 6'6", that dude's 6'6", 230. He can sling it. He can break tackles. He can outrun. Now, listen, he couldn't stay healthy. That was a big deal for him. And he made some mistakes that Oklahoma State game. I remember, I'm like, what the freak was that, homie? Like, what are we doing? Like, how do we even throw that there? We're winning this game by 21 points, I think, at one point, and got him back in it. And so, and that happened throughout the season. But yeah, obviously the most important position. I thought the one spot was probably my toughest decision. How about that? Like, I think there's a lot of you know, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 6 through 10 to me is all interchangeable. Like I could have them in any spot.
Same.
Okay. I'm not worried about that. But 1 and 2 were very difficult for me. So I went with production over over prediction. And I say that I think I've seen Klubnik throw for 3,600 yards and 36 touchdowns and almost 500 yards rushing. I know his system is going to be very good. I know he's going to put up numbers. I know his receivers are across the board are really good. I think his numbers are going to be closer to 4,000. I think he'll break 40 touchdowns. I think his rushings will be really, really good. And I think at the end of the day, his numbers on this list, he's going to prove to be the best quarterback.
Okay. So you put Cade Klubnik.
Yeah.
At numero uno on this list. I put him third.
Really? Who'd you put one?
Sam Levitt.
I'm good with that. That's who I was deciding between one. Tell me why.
I think you've seen this kid carry a team along, you know, obviously with Scataboo, and that helped.
I was about to say, Scataboo finishing the top five of the Heisman would disagree about carrying him.
Yes, but they were a completely different team with him on the field versus not. And
they lost with him injured, remember?
Scataboo didn't play, they win one. He didn't play, loss. So just importance, and to me, it's just the talent. It's the combination of the running and the throwing. I think actually Klubnik's running might come down a little bit this year because
– if they find a tailback.
The rhythm of their offense, I think, will be more so in the playing with the lead and things like that to where he won't need to run as much, whereas I still think – Arizona State's going to be in all these competitive games throughout the Big 12 all year, and Levitt's going to need to make those type of plays. So
why this was tough for me to put Levitt. I saw enough from Levitt on the big stages consistently to know he's the real deal. And this goes back to what we just talked about with confidence, because that dude was asked about him versus Quinn Ewers, and he was like, yeah, I'm him. I'm better. Like, and again, you got to have that. He's in a system that I think is extremely quarterback friendly. He's in a league that doesn't play a lot of defense, which is really, really good. He's got an elite QB, an elite wide receiver. I trust that team to be great. But I mean, just his escapability and his ability to break tackles and make people miss, it's elite. Like, it's really at the quarterback spot. Like, we can go to Lenora Sellers because that dude's a tank, and he just like truck sticks people because he can, and it's really fun. But like, I think Levitt has a better ability to make you miss and make big plays. And so that's why I had Levitt too. So I'm right there with you on that. So I guess the question is, who you got too then?
I had Lenore Sellers.
Okay.
And the reason, in terms of just ranking, that I put him above Cade was the eliteness of his traits. And he also already went in and beat him. In his place. So that's why I put him above.
I can't rock with that, bro. You're telling me a guy that threw for 2,500 yards, 18 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions, you're putting a guy over a guy that put up almost 4,000 and almost 40 TDs a year ago. I understand what you're saying. And I might even say, if you're asking me who I have to take and I want to go coach, that might be a different animal but here's the thing. Lenore Sellers, he's had those great moments, but he also, as a passer, has had some really bad moments, and he's not even close to an elite passer yet. Like, he's got a lot to work on in that standpoint. Here's what I'll say about him running, and some people might not like this, but if you watch the game, it is absolutely true. He doesn't always run hard. When he does, he's absolutely a handful. He's a nightmare to bring down. He should never slide at that size. Like, bug meat windshield every time. Like, fall forward. Cam never slid. There's a reason, because I'm bigger and stronger than every single person out here. Like, so I didn't love his running all the time. I feel like he could be better in that. But I think he'll get better, you know, as a passer. But there's no way I can do that. One can beat you in both aspects. And last year, you know, that wasn't the case with Lenore. It was extremely inconsistent through the air.
Okay, so hey, we got some differentiation at least. Not like we're just talking the same at every point here. And a lot, some of that is also, I do think he is going to get better.
And I mean, it was his first year, and he definitely didn't have, like, it's not like he was playing with an elite group around him. Now, Rocket Sanders was really good, but he was also banged up a little bit. But it'll be interesting to watch South Carolina, a new coordinator too, like to watch this offense, you know, how it goes next year. Because usually you see a lot of really good defense in South Carolina and the offenses come and go. Last year they played some pretty good offense, and I think that's why their season was good. All right, so that was – I had Club 1, Levitt 2, Lenoris 3. So we've got our first
three. Top three. Same top three, just in different orders.
Correct. So who you got four?
Drew Aller.
All right. Why? Who's five for you then?
Kevin Jennings.
Oh, geez. Okay. All right. Why do you have Aller there over some of the other guys?
I just think he's also a kid who's going to take another step and elevate his game on what's coming back, what they add, you know, some of the transfer stuff that they add, the receiver position, another year with the same offensive coordinator. I think he is big for him. And I think it's also a potential kind of thing, because I think physically
huge arm
has that ability. And again, looking at him compared to the rest of the group, I think it was more of he's got situation plus the physical traits.
Yeah, he's definitely got the big body. You know, one thing I really enjoyed about him last year too was he ran more, and he ran more decisive. But I have a hard time. I still remember how that season ended, and it's still – you know, sticks back in here. And same with Kevin Jennings, by the way. Like,
yes.
And this is why I had someone else in that next spot. I got Nico, because I thought Nico kind of did this, you know, most the last part of the season did this. And here's what I loved about Nico, you know, no run game later in the season against Ohio State, sticking his face in there, even after he got in concussions, thought he had some toughness. I thought his receivers weren't that great. Another year in the system. I feel like his tools are so good, man. Like the ball coming out, his scrambling, his size. Like, I kind of went with Nico over those other guys because of that. I went with Nico because of tools and down the stretch and the toughness. And then I went Aller with you because I see it, but I also – and having Koltunecki was huge. And having him again next year is huge. And I think that helps him, but – Something's missing from his progression that I would love to see continue to grow. Like, I would love to see Drew to be able to go bam, bam, bam. And listen, let's be honest. They didn't have a lot of elite speed out wide. This wasn't Penn State that we're used to with great receivers that went on the outside like they had for so many seasons. So I have it a little bit different. I had Nico 4 and then Drew Aller 5. And then I had Kevin Jennings 6 because I still can't get out of my mind 3 interceptions, 2 pick sixes against Penn State.
Yeah, that was the – I agree.
But when you watch Jennings, and I know you because you're a talent evaluator and you see the game, you know, at an elite level, like the things he can do are special. And I think that as I started to go down the list, that's what started to separate. Like, who has the special? And Jennings has the my feet aren't even set and just rip it. And Jennings has the I can make anybody miss. And he had he came up clutch against Clemson, and he had some big moments where he came up clutch. Remember, he wasn't even the starter last year to start the season. Stone was, and then took over, you know, after game three and showed you why, man. I tell you what, the talent is elite. And Rhett Lashley came on this pod at the end of the year last year and talked about he wasn't even really recruiting the kid that hard. And then he saw him. Yeah. He was like, who the freak is that guy? Like, that's a freak. I want that guy. And that's how he got him kind of to SMU. So agree with the talent perspective. So I think so where did you have Nico and
I had Nico 6th. But Aller 4, Jennings 5, Nico 6.
Okay. All right. We're good to speed. Now where are we going next?
So, by the way, that's the top 6 we are in terms of these, again, are returning quarterbacks that were on the final top 25.
Yeah, I can hear Texas fans. Where's Arch Manning, you dork? Come on.
or an LSU fan. Where's Matt Meyer? He's returning. Well, you weren't in the top 25 at the end of the year. Sorry. So this we got some caveats to this, but we both had the top six, just in different order. One other last point on Al. I think what Penn State went to from pre-Koltunecki to Koltunecki was like grade school to high school football. And now you take another leap in that realm. So that's one other thing for me. I just think they were so limited.
He lost his pacifier. Good Lord. That throwing to 44 was a great.
Oh, yes. That was, Tyler was a nice little answer.
That was a great blinky, a binky, man. That was a great teddy bear to walk around with. And replacing that sucker is not easy. But I do think the returning the running backs and the offensive line is going to be very much intact. Talking to Koltunecki a few months ago about the tight ends, he feels really good about them. Like, there's a lot to feel good about for Penn State. Penn State took that next step too. So, then you get Coach Knowles. Like, they're everything about Penn State, man, is on the uptick, and hopefully Aller can continue to upwardly traject.
So 7 through 10 for me, I had Luke Altmaier, Retzloff, Mad Dog Madsen, and then Rocco Beck. But I did sort of clump them together in your differentiation here is minimal. Kind of the same. Altmaier, at least, I think, you got, which all these guys, by the way, experienced out the wazoo. Yep. So maybe they do have that great final season.
Well, the thing about Altmaier that I really liked last year was thinking about Bielema teams, ground and pound, all they do. From him coming in and 22 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, super efficient, man. Like, super efficient. Big win at the end of the season versus Lenora Sellers, who's on this list. And if Lenora beat Klubnik, and that was the differentiator between, why didn't you put them a difference above? But anyways. I think that Luke, another year as a starter. The thing I like, I've told you, I like Rocco Beck a lot. Like, and last year he had, he had 2,000-yard receivers at Iowa State, and that was a lot because of him spreading the ball around. Made mistakes, yes, but also had that grit and toughness. And Mad Dog Maddox from Boise, like, he beat out Taylen Green, who went to Arkansas, who I just bragged on with his skills. He beat out another 5-star guy. Like, he wasn't supposed to be the guy. Huh?
The transfer kid, Nelson kid. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Malachi Nelson, huge guy huge guy up the road in California, right? Southern Cal with them, right? I mean, that big name, huge talent. He beat him out because that dude's got some unbelievable heady knowledge of the game. He showed some scrambling ability, efficient, knows how to get the ball out of his hand on time, in rhythm. Like, so a lot to like about them, a lot to like about Rocco. And Retzlaff, like, what I loved about him, I love that he brought up the PFF grades last year in rankings. I love that he was like, hey, hold my beer, right? Because they had him not even remotely on the list of Big 12 quarterbacks. Like, he was like 16. I mean, so far down the list, and had an unbelievable year, came up clutch in a bunch of big games, shows the scrambling ability, the rushing ability too, and the playmaking ability. Like, so I think all of those guys are really, really good. It's not like they're bad. They're just – when it comes to those other guys got some extra, just whether it be – here's the cool thing, or here's the thing I like about this, Brent, and I've coached with you for a long time. None of these guys are statues anymore. Statues are out of the game. Like, get rid of statues, man. I'm so tired of watching pocket passing quarterbacks. Like, they're a dinosaur. They're extinct. They need to be – you need to get great guys that can run. And while some of these guys aren't freak athletes – they can all move enough to move the sticks and make that extra play where you have to play the scramble drill, and now somebody's able to make a play down the field.
You can't be a zero or a minus as a mover at the quarterback position anymore whatsoever. I also think, too, one sort of big picture point about this is all these guys we talked about, these aren't necessarily the power programs. A couple of them are. But you've got the power programs – and consistently top 5, top 10 teams replacing quarterbacks. So you got, you're going to have talent around that guy. And then you've got these teams that are that sort of in the 12 to 25 range from a ranking perspective who have their quarterback, and now they're adding two. I just think it's going to make for a great college football season. and a lot of good quarterback play and things that go with that. All right, so we had the top six that were the same in different order. Top three were the same, different order, and then four through six also same but different order. So I'm going to go through. I've got eight names that whose teams weren't in the top 25 at the end. Would you put them into that top six?
Okay. So Garrett, I think there's Garrett several. Nussmeier. Go ahead.
Garrett Nussmeier, LSU.
Yep, sure would. Nussmeier made more – watching him last year, I think he made more wow plays than just about every quarterback I watched. The wow plays. Now, yep. He also made some of those plays that made me want to slap him. So I think that it went hand in hand, but smart, been in the system for multiple years, has the knack, has the arm, going to have the receiving core, a little bit more experience, turned down those mistakes that he did, critical mistakes that he made with the fumbles and the INTs. And Nussmeier's absolutely, from a talent perspective, 100% at the top of that list.
All right, so would you put him in that top three group and kick somebody out of that top three group we had with Levitt, Sellers, or Cade, Sellers, Levitt, that threesome? Would you put Nuss in that group, kick somebody out?
The only one, obviously, I would think about would be Lenoris, because Nussmeier is exponentially better as a passer. Like, not even – it's like what Nussmeier can do right now, Lenoris will never even get to. Like, he'll never scratch the surface of – what Nussmeier can do throwing the football and anticipating and throwing in different windows. But Lenore Sellers also has the 6'4", 250-pound frame that will put you on his hood. So I would take Nussmeier and the experience and what I get from him. They played last year head-to-head. Nussmeier beat him, remember? So I guess in Brent's list, he's going to be ahead.
Didn't Sellers get knocked out of that game, though?
Yeah, he did. He came back, but he was definitely a shell.
He was out for a bit. Out for a bit, so don't forget that. All right, DJ Lagway.
Let me tell you something, bro. And I know you know what I'm going to say because I've said it since I've watched this kid. Like, the deep ball is already the best in the country. I mean, it is so good. It is effortless fire that comes out of his arm. Like, if you go to the driving range, it's an effortless 320. It's just like swinging easy, piping it down the middle. Like, and it's just soaring over the 320. Like, it's just, it's crazy. Now his talent deserves to be above those others, 100%. But his, like, he ain't even close to when it comes to Mad Dog with being able to organize his feet, stay in rhythm, you know, and go through progressions, not even close. And he misses way too many layups. But I can teach a lot of the other stuff. I can't give those other guys that howitzer. I can't give them a rocket launcher. I can't give them a hand cannon that Lagway has. And again, the Lagway toughness that I saw with the hamstring and coming back, and just, I think he's got a little something to him. So I would put Lagway up there. I'm not going to put him in the top three. He's not there yet, but he is definitely in the top six with those other group.
Yeah, he'd be pushing that second tier for me, but you got to see it, and you got to see it consistently. Next, I'm going to give you three in one here, three Big 12 guys: Avery Johnson, K-State; Morton, Texas Tech; and then Josh Hoover at TCU. Any of these guys are you putting in any of these tiers here?
No, I'm not. But I will say this, man. Like, I've seen flashes from Avery Johnson that whets my appetite, that makes me go, ooh, I like that. Just the athletic ability is pretty dang good, pretty high level. But too much inconsistency with that Kansas State offense, you know, last year. And again, he played in the Pop-Tart Bowl, I think, 2 years ago and played great. And then last year, just a lot of up and down, inconsistent. So he would be the one that I would say that has probably flashed the most potential and the most, like, that's caught my eye, but not near enough consistency from him in that offense.
Taylen Green, you've already sort of talked about. So
Freak Leak. God. Hey, maybe he gets in the portal after this next window. I mean, I just don't. That guy confuses me, man. Because that guy, I think he's a nightmare. Like, if you put him with certain QBs and in a system with some good receivers, like, I've seen enough to to say that dude is an absolute freaking handful. When we get to the draft next year and we're starting to talk about guys, here's the thing that's going to suck. Everybody who plays Arkansas, it's going to be a pain in your ace. It's going to be an absolute pain in your ace. And you're going to have to take that because that's hard to tackle at that slipperiness and then making plays. Like Taylen Green is he's got some potential to be unbelievable.
All right, so two other names. What tier are you putting these guys? Diego Pavia, Vandy, and then Dylan Raiola at Nebraska.
Man, Pavia's fun. I mean, Pavia's,
I think that's actually probably the best descriptor.
I hate it because everybody talked about it last year, but he does have that element of Johnny Football where it's just the pump fakes and he breaks tackles and it's just, and obviously the Bama game, you know, puts you above. I mean, shoot, dude, you're talking about a winning season and a bowl win at Vanderbilt. It's been a decade, homie. It's been over a decade. I bet you it's been 15 years for gosh sake since that happened. I mean, probably since Franklin was there. I mean, it's been a long time and it was close games. It was clutch moments. It was that he's got that bop, you know, that like, I will do whatever it takes. I don't give a dang. I might walk in a team meeting and give you double birds. Like, it just doesn't matter. Like, he's just got some swag that you love in the game. It's fun to watch. It's got to be infectious. It's contagious. It's just, and that's another one that like, I surprised somebody didn't say, hey, come in here and come to my school and we'll give you a bunch of money to do it because my goodness, he's got the, I mean, I would put him above Lenora Sellers. He's got to go above Lenora's for me because he's got the scrambling. He's got the physicality, but he's a better thrower and a better playmaker. And I think he did about as much as anybody in the country last year of doing more with less.
Boom. That okay.
That surprised you a little bit.
The last part did, yes. I will say that. The last part did. So given that we've looked at all of these quarterbacks now, if I gave you the list that we looked at last week, which includes Arch, Carson Beck, John Mateer, some other, you know, guys that have played a little bit at least. Just who are your top three guys that you're looking at coming back to college football in 2025?
I start with Cade. I mean, I think Cade is – I just think Cade – I've watched the maturity with him, and that's why I'm so high on Clemson next year. And I think Clemson's going to be unbelievable, and I think bringing in Tom Allen emphasizes it even more. And spring ball, I think, is going great for them, and I think they're going to have a great year. But just the experience of Cade, Leavitt, I think he's got superstar written all over him. I just do. I just think who he is, his personality with Tyson, with Dillingham, that league, like, I'm betting on him. I'm putting him in the top three for sure. I guess people are going to argue for Arch Manning, right? That'll be somebody that'll be high on that list. Pavia is high on this list for me. Nussmeier, golly. So if I had to pick a third, I would definitely go Club. I would definitely go Leavitt.
Toughness. Make him pick.
I mean, it's between Nussmeier and Pavia for me.
Okay.
So I would probably go Nussmeier because I tell you what, man.
You go Garrett Pavia.
Yeah, Garrett Pavia, that'd be great.
Just win the pass to get playmaking.
Nussmeier's got that. He's also got that kind of, you know, screw you, I'll rip it, let it fly, you know, aggressive. Now too much so, but I'd probably go with Nussmeier at three. And so you got ACC, Big 12, SEC. So you got three different conferences in the mix, which is kind of cool. But that's
all of that's it
fun.
To me.
It's gonna be fun. You're right. You have more competition in this college football era than we've had, and now you've got, you know, so many guys being replaced. So now I think this year does add for a recipe of it's gonna be freaking fantastic. Like, it's gonna be another. very, I think we're going to be deciding between four or five teams at the end of the season between who are the top 12. And I think it's going to be extremely competitive. And I think it's going to be big level brands that people are arguing over that are really, really good football teams that have had great years.
I agree. I agree. That's all I got.
That's all you got, man. And that's what we do here at See Ball, Get Ball. That's just, we just talk ball all the time. And if you guys like it, man, just keep listening. We'll continue to bring you guests. We're going to continue to, we got Marcus Freeman coming up after spring ball, which will be cool. I think he's one of the, if you're doing a coolest list, like of just straight studs, like guys that you would probably want to have like a drink with and just sit down and kick it, he's probably pretty high on that list. I mean, he's got that factor to him. He played defense, so he knew how to see ball, get ball. That was one of his strengths. Like, right? At the linebacker position, that's what you do. So we will see you guys again later on in the – we'll see you guys next week. Next Monday, we'll kick it back off, and we're going to rank some edge rushers. I think that'll be a fun recipe. Brent has made me sit down and rank the top edge rushers for this class, and it was very fun, just like doing this list of, okay, why are you taking so-and-so over the other one? And it's just – it's cool because you got to pick between different styles. And are you a bass guy? Or are you a treble guy? You know, like that's what's fun about this world. Some people like the booty. Some people like the other area, right? Like that's what's your style and what are you get down with the most? So we appreciate y'all getting down with us, and we'll see you next week.